Welcome to the Tap Room exclusive. This is our first episode. I'm Dean Zarbaugh. Joining me today is Mike Foran. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate you taking out the time. We are here at the Market Garden Palace of Fermentation.
That's right. Yeah.
For the listeners who might not be familiar with Market Garden, what's the history behind this place?
So, yeah, basically, we actually started as retailers first. So in 2005, we opened a Belgian beer bar called Beer Market here in Ohio City in Cleveland on West 25th Street. And, you know, back then, the neighborhood was not nearly what it is today. You know, Great Lakes Brewery was right around the corner and obviously played a major role in kind of kicking off the rebirth of this neighborhood. But, you know, back then it was still a little rough around the edges. So it was a bit of a leap of faith to open that first business. And we kind of grew from there. Here, again, on 25th Street, we opened up Barcento in 2007. Jonathan Sawyer was actually our partner, chef partner, to kick it off. Speakeasy, which is a cocktail lounge, and that was in 2009. After opening these and finding, you know, what a great growth opportunity, beer and, you know, high-end craft beer, especially local beer, you know, with the success here in Ohio City, we felt like, hey, you know, we love drinking beer. We love selling beer. We're good at it.
Right.
Maybe we should get into making beer.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was kind of before the major brew pub and brewery, you know, ramp up, you know, really just shot up there. And, you know, there was still a good amount of regional breweries that were, you know, seeing a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. You know, your obviously Great Lakes, but, you know, your Stones, your Dogfish Heads, your Bells. That was their big-time growth years. And, you know, we felt like, hey, this is a business that we love. Let's get into it on the production side. We kind of looked at a property that was right across the street from us, again, right next to the West Side Market. And we felt like, hey, maybe we should do it right here in this neighborhood. A lot of people felt like, aren't you just going to be stealing your customers? You know, like, are you going to cannibalize, that kind of thing? But we felt like, honestly, people are going to continue to come down to Ohio City. It's a growing neighborhood. You know, we're going to continue to invest in being down here. And so we kind of took that leap of faith. And you know, we bought the property in 2009. And, you know, first thing I think we realized is, well, we know how to, We love drinking beer. We know how to sell it. We're good at that. We don't know a darn thing about making it. We were extremely fortunate because originally it was the three partners, myself, Sam McNulty, and Mark Premer. We were extremely fortunate that a guy named Andy Tavikram was actually moving back here to Cleveland to open his own brewery. Some background on Andy. He actually was the head of brewing at Great Lakes for 9 years. And then the head of brewing at Dogfish Head for 5.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, he was the brewmaster at both locations through their formative and growth years, and really kind of, you know, really helped give each one of those businesses their persona. But, you know, he's a Northeastern Ohio guy. His wife's from Cleveland. He wanted to come back, and it was perfect timing. Because, you know, we knew how to sell beer and we loved beer, but you know, we didn't know how to make it. And Andy, you know, he didn't have a ton of experience on the retail side, but he sure as hell knew how to make beer. So a friend of mine got us his phone number. We called and we had him down to have dinner at Barcento and you know, kind of showed him what we were about.
Yeah.
And I think you could see in his eyes that night, like, hey, I think this is going to make a lot of sense, you know. So I'm giving you the long story here. But so anyways, we got together as a group of four in end of 2009. And we built out the brew pub here in Ohio City in 2011. We opened in June. You know, we've had a great advantage to have several years of, you know, research, development, test marketing, a lot of visibility with our customers since 2011.
Yeah,
we kind of always knew we wanted to get into production and distribution, but you know, it was the kind of thing we wanted to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. Wanted to find the right location, and you know, meanwhile, we just kind of had our hands full because we were a growing brew pub business.
Right.
You know, since year one, we've done almost 2,000 barrels of beer a year just at the brew pub.
Wow.
Which, you know, there's a lot of large brew pubs these days. There's tons popping up every week. But you know, when we opened, we were probably on a just straight volume, one of the, you know, top, I'd say 50 or 100 in the country on just overall barrelage. So that being said, you know, we kind of kept our eyes out for the right opportunity to get into production. And here in Ohio City, again, there was the property we're sitting in right now behind the West Side Market that became available. And we kind of jumped on it because, you know, we looked at other opportunities in the suburbs or, you know, a little farther out. Would have been easy to just kind of build a brand new building or something like that. But we just felt like so much of our story is interwoven into this neighborhood and into downtown Cleveland. And we felt like, yeah, this building was pretty rough when we kind of went through it as an opportunity. But, you know, it just made the most sense. In our gut, we felt like, hey, we should be here in Ohio City. So we jumped on it in 2012 and kind of slow rehabbed it and then kind of hit the gas in 2014 to where we finally had our first production brewery batch, I guess about 2 years ago now, so February 2016.
Oh, nice.
So, again, we had 5 years of developing, you know, our processes. You know, and Andy brought a ton of, you know, his expertise to the team here, and he spent, you know, the last few years continuing to drive in those systems and really to build a brewing culture and brewing team here that, you know, is very much in line with his very specific methods of brewing and all the process down to getting the beer into your glass.
Well, I remember the first time I came here on a tour, that's what struck me first, is just how much of a family type environment it is here and how everybody's just ready to go do their job. You know, it just seems like it's a very well-oiled machine. Like everybody really shows up to work.
Yeah. And I, again, you know, we have almost 200 employees between, you know, the restaurants. So to back up, we also opened Nano Brew, which is right up the block in 2012. A storefront became available and we felt like, hey, this would be a great opportunity to put in like a little pilot brewery and have another separate concept here on the street.
Yeah.
Again, people thought we were nuts to open our, you know, what is that, our fifth business on one city block. But I think people saw the organic nature in which we did develop our retail side. But, you know, again, that allowed us the opportunity to truly let our customers decide, you know, what of our beers do they really enjoy and do they want to see on shelves and in their, you know, pubs and restaurants outside of Ohio City. You know, we call it, we kind of joke that it's the Bermuda Triangle, or, you know, I like to say that all of our beers have a life cycle here in Ohio City where they start as a 22-gallon batch at Nano Brew. And, you know, sometimes it's testing a new malt, a new hop varietal, you know, a new yeast process. Sometimes it's just a new style, or we're taking, you know, a recipe we already have and kind of altering it. We can kind of play with it. And we all taste it. The brewers taste it. You know, we as a executive group taste it. And the best part is then our customers taste it.
Yeah.
And we've made it in a small batch, and we get some great feedback from them. We put a new one on every Thursday, and, you know, the fantastic, you know, insanely successful ones, you know, they sell out by, you know, midday on Friday.
Oh, wow.
They're almost always gone by midday on Saturday. And we get that great feedback. And, you know, we're able to kind of take that and say, all right, did we nail it the first try, or do we want to change one or two things and then re-brew it?
And you're not wasting like a huge batch
right, to
find out maybe this isn't the best.
It allows us to really think outside the box with, there's a minimal risk involved. And we're making small batches so we can kind of rip through getting that feedback quickly. And then boom, you have another one coming out the following week. And then if, you know, that beer is successful after we've kind of tweaked it or whatever, we do brew it a slightly larger, or it's really much larger, but in the grand scheme, it's still a small batch.
Right.
You know, a 10-barrel brew at the brew pub. And we go through that process all over again. You know, the beer's typically on for, you know, about a month at a time. And we, again, get some great feedback. And we went through that process for about 5 years. And, you know, from the get-go, we kind of knew which beers were going to make the most sense for us to distribute. But you know, just seeing week after week certain beers be the top sellers, and then also try some, you know, one-offs and seasonal type beers that were successful and then did become our eventual distributed seasonals and core beers. So kind of cutting the chase on that, when the beers are successful at the brew pub, that's when they make their way here to the production brewery to be brewed on a larger scale and then distributed. So, you know, day one we had Prosperity Wheat. That was, you know, Andy's pride and joy. That's the one he takes growlers home. Yeah, it is. And really, I would say that's most representative of who we are as a brewery. You know, I don't necessarily speak for Andy, but I would say, you know, his drive is to put out beers that are exemplary for their style. And I think that's one that hits the nail on the head. You know, he has a great pedigree and love for beer, German style beer making. Mm-hmm. I'm going to speak for him. He just walked
there's
in.
Andy. How
special
you doing,
special guest.
Sir?
What's right. going on?
So, Andy Tavikram, you've joined us here sitting down. Thank you for joining us. We were just in the middle of talking about
Prosperity Wheat. Your pride and joy.
what came about? How'd that come about?
Well, I've always been intrigued by German-style wheat beer, Bavarian-style wheat beer, and that's just been a challenge for me. So over the years, I've kind of done various versions of it, but once we started, you know, getting ready to open up Market Garden, you know, I had to come up with a beer list, and I thought this is going to be one that's going to be a key. I wanted to really put a good Hefeweizen out there. You know, I look at all the Blue Moon that's being sold in bars, and people go crazy for it, and I'm thinking, the world could do better, you know?
Yeah, and, absolutely.
So I did some, you know, some more reading and just kind of came up with this recipe, and has a little bit of acidic tartness that a lot of wheat beers maybe don't have. So I think that aids the overall drinkability, mm-hmm. and it works, you know?
Yeah.
That was one, Andy, I was saying that, you know, there are certain beers we've kind of R&D'd through the process, the life cycle of our beers, and, you know, that one from day one. I mean, we sold our first pint of that in 2011, and ever since then, that's been our lead, you know, flagship beer. You know, so we have those that have just been dead nuts on since day one, and then there's also the few that, you know, they've developed over the last, you know, couple years to put out into production. Obviously, the cans that you know, I know we were going to talk about a little bit. These are three brands that, you know, they've continued to develop, and now we're putting them out in distribution.
Real quick, speaking of the production facility, how many barrels can you brew here? What's the capacity of this facility?
Well, with the current tanks that we have, I would say maybe 10 to 12,000 barrels. Maybe a little bit more. You know, we put in a centrifuge just a couple months ago, and that's going to help us with, you know, kind of throughput overall. But we've got room to add another row of tanks, and then we've got this whole back half of the building, which we haven't touched yet.
Nice. So I think, we've estimated, of course, it all depends on what styles you're putting through, but I think we've estimated 100,000 for the entire footprint of the building. To Andy's point, you know, 12,000 on the tanks we have. I think if we put in that next row, we could be at 25. So,
nice.
You know, credit to these guys. They designed this space to be super efficient in that throughput. And, you know, we can scale very well right now without having to add in really that much infrastructure other than more tanks.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now we're going to get into the, you mentioned the cans. You guys just hit the market right now. Three new cans. Core offerings. These are going to be available year round.
Correct.
Let's start with the Nano Lager.
The OG Lager.
Yeah,
that's one of Andy's favorites too.
That's please. What came about? How'd this beer come about?
It's kind of just a version of one that we've done at the pub, also since day one. So we're just kind of reaching into our playbook and pulling one out, rebranding it a bit. But it's just a really nice, easy. Sessionable, crisp kind of lager. It's got a nice kind of snappy hop finish, but it's not like a Pilsner with a big kind of hop flourish. It's just a little bit, you know, a little bit more drinkable, crushable, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that was the first one because I've had the other two. I had not had, so that was like the first, I was really ready to go for something I hadn't had.
Yeah.
And it really hit me just how clean and nice that is, and that's just like a good after work beer. Sit down.
It's a good breakfast beer too.
Absolutely. I go for stouts. No, And I was mentioning to Mike, you know, my grandfather was more on the big beer side of things. He didn't understand this industry too much. Mm-hmm. But I could have given him this nano lager and the world would have opened up to him.
Right.
I think that is such a great beer.
I do think earlier, I think it's probably the beer of these three that has the widest appeal. To your point, you know, I look at my dad too. You know, he's a guy that, you know, for a long time drank, you know, big beer, and you know, he mixes it up these days a lot more, but he's going to love this beer.
Yeah.
I also have friends that are, you know, I'm 35, about my age, or even, you know, some of our staffers that are younger that, you know, they'll drink a couple IPAs and they want something that's a little bit lower ABV after that.
Yeah.
To kind of keep their wits about them. And, you know, this beer is going to fit that bill perfectly and still offer all the same flavor profiles that they want and expect out of a great craft beer.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah. We just had the Ohio Craft Brewers Guild conference here in Cleveland.
Yes.
And so we had, you know, 600 odd brewers and associated trade people in town, and so we had a reception here that Tuesday night, but at the trade show and at the reception there were just lines of brewers asking for this beer because, you know, they're drinking all day, and
yeah,
if you're going from 11 to 11 you kind of want something that you can really you know, maintain with, but also I think a lot of them realize it's not easy to make a good lager, you know.
Yeah.
it takes some work.
The can, I was reading on the side of the can, talking about how it goes back to how beer was brewed 100 years ago. What was the process behind that? What was the inspiration to do that?
So there's a beer style known as pre-prohibition Pilsner or pre-prohibition lager, which is kind of what the German immigrants that came over here, you know, developed as a way to use native malt, six row barley, for example. If you use that to make an all malt beer, it comes out very coarse and astringent. So they had to cut that coarseness with some kind of adjunct. So in this case, we use a little bit of rice.
Okay.
And it gives it a just kind of tones it down a hair, makes it very smooth, but very clean. If you didn't know it was in there, you'd probably never figure it out.
Yeah.
Which is a kind of a subtlety that I like to play with.
I can't. My palate isn't fully developed yet, I will admit, but I wouldn't have been able to tell anything in that.
I like corn, or I like rice much more than corn. Corn has a distinctive flavor that's kind of sweet and kind of gross.
Now, if you were going to pair something with this beer, what would you say would be a good pairing?
Well, other than Cheerios, I would say just about any traditional beer food is going to work well with this, you know, from hamburgers to brats. I had pierogi.
I had brats and pierogies for dinner the other night with these.
Nice.
And it tasted pretty darn good. So
now I'm hungry for pierogies.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just Cleveland, but during the Brewers Convention, there was a reception Monday night at Great Lakes. Pierogi were served. Tuesday at the conference for lunch, pierogi.
Yeah.
Here at our reception, more pierogi.
I think we're typecast at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody's going to melt and getting that whatever the pierogi sandwich is over there. And they're like, yeah, everybody in Cleveland just eats pierogies. Well, thank you. That breaks down the nano lager. And then on this, now we're going to break down the Chinook Strike. You want to do that one next?
Yeah, sure.
So I remember my dad had this. This was on tap at the brew pub, correct?
Yep.
My dad had this last time we came up here. He loves the pine notes on beer. That's what he goes for. So he had that and that, eyes lit up. So what made you guys decide to go from doing it as a tap at the brew pub to making it a core offering in a can?
So, yeah, I think the big thing was, you know, developing these styles over the last few months. So, you know, we had in our minds, hey, we've had a ton of success with Citramax, a big, bold, well-balanced, hoppy IPA with, you know, more of the grapefruit and peachy notes.
Mm-hmm.
We felt like, let's put out another IPA into the market. This time it'll go into a can. And let's find a way to really differentiate those styles, those flavors, you know, so that it's complements what we offer with Citramax, but it's still very different. So that was at least the goal to develop it.
Right. And so we're, you know, to differentiate, it's not the same ABV. It's 6%, whereas Citramax is closer to 7. But the hop profile is quite different. We're going more in the realm of dankness of resin, of pine, you know, whereas Citramax is, again, more the Citra hop, which has this very kind of tropical fruit peach-like character.
What is it that gives it the resin taste?
It's just the hop varieties that we play with. Yeah.
Okay.
We have a hop called Eureka that's in there, and that's got a particularly resinous
character. What I was going to mention is a blend of Chinook and Eureka hops.
Mm-hmm. And a couple others. You know, we like to just sprinkle them around.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can never have too many hops, right?
That's right.
And so with this, again, pairing, what would you go with? As far as
you know, I haven't really thought about that yet. But
IPA is always a tough one.
It is a really tough one. Whenever I'm sitting down, I have to wait until I make my food before I know if I'm going to get.
I usually pair it with another IPA.
Yeah,
that's always good. Yeah. That's a good one.
They do well with certain kinds of dessert, like carrot cake, for example, or something
that. That would be really nice.
But there's this kind of myth out there, persistent myth that's finally being debunked that. Like hot, spicy food goes well with IPA because the bitterness and the heat kind of complement. But no, it just makes your mouth hurt more.
Yeah. You know? I just remember my tongue being like, hey, dude, like, leave it alone.
Yeah, I think there are certain cheeses that go well with IPA. Yeah. You know, I think like a real sharp cheddar, for example, I like.
Yeah, like a blue cheese or something like that. The character of the cheese can stand up to the character of the beer, and they're not overwhelming each other.
Yeah,
this beer is also shotgunnable. Right on the label.
I saw that. I almost tried it the other day.
There's been some people around here that are like, "All right, I got to put this to a test. Let's do it."
There, I found a little. I saw something on Facebook. Someone selling like a little thing that shotguns your beer so you don't have to use a key anymore and it doesn't spray your beer everywhere.
It's genius.
They're thinking of everything nowadays. I want to take a step back real quick because I forgot to mention the design on these cans. The beautiful cans, by the way.
Pretty sexy, yeah.
They feel really great in the hand. Like they really do. Like I was mentioning, you know, that was what I was talking with my dad about, is just you like holding this. Mm-hmm. The label's nice. What was the inspiration behind doing the raised...
Yeah, so we worked, myself and a gal that works for us named Jenica Gonzalez. She's our in-house graphic designer. And, you know, we kind of had a vision for what we wanted out of the can. And, you know, my vision was let's make sure it's very very clear, the master brand. So we have our Guardian of Transportation, you know, that is our main logo right in your face. And we wanted it to be something that definitely stood out on the shelf and was slightly different than what we have in the six packs in terms of color scheme. And you know, we had talked to a canning and you know, sleeving brand company, and they were doing some cool things on the tactile front. And I was a big fan of having the can be matte finish.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like that, you know, really exudes a quality and sexiness. Like
it
Andy
stands
said.
Out.
It does,
really stands
you
out.
Know, but I think, you know, even around here, people were really excited to see the designs when they saw it just, you know, as a design, you know, two-dimensional design. But it was such a nice little pleasant surprise for people when they picked it up and then they felt this tactile element on the front. It's almost like an embossment.
Yeah.
It was just an added component to it that adds some nuance.
I won't lie. When I first saw it, I nerded out when I saw it with the design. I was like, oh, it's got a raised label. Yeah. Like people around me were like looking at me like, this guy's like getting like really happy about beer cans. I was like, look at them. They look beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
Plus, we wanted to tie them in with our bottles, which have a very kind of thick wine label type, you know, highly textured feel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of just taking the same idea and moving it over into cans. But definitely raising the imagery with some added ink basically really took it over the top.
And then the last one is the Frosty Lime Wit.
Right, which I believe you had probably last summer.
Yes.
This was another one we developed at Nano Brew and then here at the Brew Pub. Just explosive success on the feedback. And it was when we went to, again, design what beers we were going to put in the cans and relaunch as some new additional year-rounds. This was like a natural fit. You know, we felt day one, all right, Frosty, that's going to be it. We'll work with the recipe a little bit, but... It's fantastic. It's got the triumvirate of citrus with the lime, the tangerine, and then the lemon drop hops that are used in there. But you want to tell them about the base recipe, Andy?
Yeah, so it's basically our version of a Belgian wit beer or white beer, and the classic one being like Hoegaarden. This is a little bit stronger, so almost, you know, more saison than wit. It's kind of in between there. We use this French saison yeast that has this really interesting, very dry, peppery, spicy finish, you know, kind of, and fully just really attenuates well. And then you start laying over some of the other elements of the tangerine and the lime and, you know, those hops just really all kind of comes together really nicely.
I feel like that yeast adds an element, you know, when you have the carbonation on your tongue, it just it has the really refreshing element that you know, that you enjoy. I feel like that saison yeast that they use for this beer, like, really amps that up. So it's super refreshing.
Oh, absolutely. I love the balance between the lime and the tangerine. Mm-hmm. It really does a nice dance.
I would say that's these guys, you know, Andy and his team that he's mentored and really taught his philosophies. I'd say that's their calling card. You know, whether it's we're talking about Frosty Lime Wit with Tangerine, or, you know, any of our Festivus Ale, our Holiday Ale, or any of our barrel-aged beers, they find the right balance of all the flavors. They can weave it together like a tapestry, but you're never going to walk away saying, wow, that was kind of good, but it had too much of this or not enough of that. They always find the right balance.
Yeah, we're trying to make it not be fruit salad.
Right, exactly. No,
it's still beer.
It is very much beer.
It tastes like beer. You can enjoy it like a beer.
That's like a couple people who aren't into craft who saw me kind of get nerdy about all these things. they're like, what's, you know, this orange one looks interesting, and then they see lime and tangerine. They're like, they kind of just do that weird look with their face, like, wait, lime and tangerine, but it's beer. I'm like, yeah, it's 100%. Like, you try it. You would be really surprised at the... It's not what you would think in your head if you're not normally into those
and that's,
profiles.
That's the beauty, again, of their process. They, you know, we're not just going to make a beer and just send it out into the market. These guys work for months to dial in these recipes, and I think that's why when you go to pull, you know, now a can of ours off the shelf, a bottle or a can of ours off the shelf, you can have the confidence that these guys put in the time, the effort, and the expertise to make sure that you're going to enjoy that beer.
And what was the final kind of inspiration to go to cans? Because you guys have been doing bottling for a while.
Yeah, so, you know, we've been doing bottling since day one. You know, I think that was the process we felt the most comfortable with as a startup brewery to really dial in the quality. I think we always, I mean, we're not blind. We see that the market is definitely getting more and more heated with cans. We knew that was going to be an opportunity we would get to, but we felt like, hey, quality-wise, let's nail the bottles, let's get that out there, and then when we're ready to grow, let's incorporate a canning line. You know, about 2 years in, we felt like, okay, we have enough presence in the market that it's time to expand on brands. You know, we've had 3 year rounds plus a seasonal. We felt like our success, you know, meant, all right, let's look at adding some. So let's do it, and maybe this is the time to look at getting into canning. And again, credit to these guys that they said, you know, we're not going to get into canning until we find the right line that's good for our scale and size and has all the quality checks that we demand out of our systems. There weren't really a lot of those out there. You had the mobile canning units that were a complete disaster. Right. Any startup breweries or people that want to get into startup brewing out there, I would say avoid those from a quality standpoint. And then some of the larger lines, you know, it just didn't, you know, meet our needs as a smaller startup brewery. So these guys, you know, found a company that they could really custom build with and develop so that it had all those quality checks at our scale. So Andy got in touch with PS Angeles.
Yeah, so a local company called Pneumatic Scale Angeles. Angeles has been making canned seaming equipment for 100 years, and they're this state-of-the-art, high-speed, you know, you name it. Everybody runs their equipment for seaming. And then they decided about a year and a half ago to look into doing small-scale canning. They were actually asked by can manufacturers to explore getting into the can filling and seaming of the small end. Well, they're that good at it, and a lot of the other small equipment manufacturers aren't. So the manufacturers are getting a lot of blowback, like, hey, man, these cans, they don't really, you know, they're not holding up the way they should. And
that's
like,
why
it's the equipment. It's not us.
Right. And that's the unfortunate thing. There's a lot of breweries that launched with, you know, either the mobile canning or, you know, not truly satisfactory canning lines, and they had quality problems. I feel bad because it's like, it's not the brewers and beer's fault. It's some of the equipment that's out there, and you can't jump the gun on that stuff. You can't jump the gun on quality.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to make sure you take your time on that. And there's still sort of I work on a retail level. I hear a lot from customers about cans, and there are a couple times it doesn't happen as much anymore. But there are still a couple people out there who go, I don't drink out of a can. Like, what do you say to the people who kind of avoid cans because it affects the taste?
I say we have four products currently in a bottle. So yeah. No, and that was a big part of the decision too. You know, people asked, well, are you just going to start canning the beers you have? And I, frankly, I didn't feel like that was the right move because, again, we wanted to offer more products because we felt like the market was ready for that from us. But, you know, there's people that are very loyal to bottles. There are people that are very loyal to cans.
Oh, absolutely.
And really, this was a way to just kind of diversify, you know, our offerings to a number of different types of customers.
Yeah, and I could be wrong on this, but preservation-wise, the cans are better for the preservation of the beer.
It depends.
As long as they're both done right. Yeah,
yeah. There's pros and cons to each.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
People will say, well, you know, the cans, they get colder faster. They also get warmer faster. So it's, you know, there's some pros and cons.
Right,
like bottles, you know, I would say when you're doing the process correctly, there's really no issue on preservation when it comes to the bottle.
Right. Yeah. I mean, cans don't get light struck for sure. But bottles, if they're brown, they're eliminating most of the light that's around them or going through them. You know, a good properly applied crown is a very good seal. And they're all recyclable. You know, there's some of the can guys are like, oh, cans are 100% recyclable. Well, so is glass. So,
yeah,
you know, you got to throw it in the right bin. That's
right. Yeah.
Just open your
eyes. There's a lot of disinformation out there. And you know, one is so much better than the other.
Right.
They both have pros and cons when it comes to the quality side of the beer. To Andy's point, they're both.
But cans are lighter. They're, you know, you can pack more of them into your arms and carry them away
and enjoy a lot more. Yeah. So, what do you guys got kind of on the future horizon?
Yeah, so we actually are kicking off our barrel aging program. When I say kicking off, I really mean just ramping it up, and we have kind of a structured plan for the entire year. Up until now, you know, we've been doing some barrel aging here at the brew pub level, and we've sent, you know, some of it out into the market. We've partnered a few times with Middle West Spirits, which they're a fantastic outfit out of Columbus, Ohio. And, you know, we had some great success, again, with Andy and his team, you know, finding the right balance of the right styles to go on the right types of barrels. We said, hey, let's ramp this up and be able to offer it, not just here in our brew pub and our retail store, but also, you know, with some small batch draft releases into the market and some 1 liter bottles here at the retail store. So we mapped out an entire year's worth. We're going to release them every month.
Oh, nice.
You know, this first one right now, we have our barrel-aged stock ale. It's been aged in Cabernet barrels, which
it's delicious.
It's delicious. It's very rich, which is perfect for this time of year. The next release is a Middle West bourbon barrel it's a rye barrel that we're aging our Irishman Enforcer Imperial Stout, which
nice.
We did that last year, had a ton of great positive feedback, so it's coming back again this year. But you look at the list, and these guys got together and put together just a really interesting, intriguing mat for the year that's not just all bourbon barrel aged. It's, you know, we're using Calvados barrels and tequila barrels, Sauvignon Blanc barrels that then had tequila in it that are then age, for example, this Frosty Lime Wit, you know. So a barrel aged beer isn't just December to March.
Yeah.
It truly can be year round, and I'm excited about that.
Oh, that's interesting. What made you guys decide to really bump up the barrel age on that?
Well, we want it to be, you know, doing a wood aged series, and it's kind of based around our pub, so we brew most of it over there. It's, you know, so small batches, 8-10 barrels But we also now have the space over here to properly age and store them. So we're actually finishing out right now our barrel aging room. So it's going to be climate controlled, temperature controlled, but also a really nice place, you know, for tours to kind of walk through and check it out, because we're churching it up, as I like to say. We have a church that we scrapped out a couple years ago, and we're taking all those various wood elements from the pews and from the altar and putting them all over the room.
Oh, wow. That would be really neat. I can't wait to see that when it's done. And then real quick before we go, to get the barrel age, you have to come here to the
release them on draft at the pub, which you'll be able to get, you know, your glass of beer if you're sitting at the pub, or you can get it in a growler to go. We're also going to be selling 1 liter bottles, cork and cage style, out of the retail store. Those will be available every day, and then we're going to be selling some the beer will be available on the tours as well to sample.
Okay, yeah.
And then, you know, your favorite bottle shops and high-end craft beer pubs will have six stills available, like I said, once a month.
And then for people who want to keep up and for all your releases and stuff, it's marketgardenbrewery.com?
Correct. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter. That's typically where we put out most of our – and Instagram.
Yeah.
I'd be lying if I said I could rattle off the handles.
Right.
But search for us. You'll find it.
Market Garden Brewery.
Yep.
Market
Garden Brewery.
Pretty easy. Mike and Andy, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know you guys are very, very busy.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for having me. And enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks.
Take care.